Today I'd like to talk to you about King Saul. Be careful what you ask for. In 1 Samuel, we read of the account of the elders of Israel asking for a king to rule over them as the other nations. Yahweh gave them their request, but told them what would happen. They didn't care. They wanted what they wanted, and they wanted it right now. And so Yahweh gave them a king. What they got was a good king gone bad. Let's go over to 1 Samuel 9, 1 through 2. Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Becheroth, the son of Aphiah, the son of Benjamite, a mighty man of valor. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice and handsome man. And there was not a mere handsome man, person, than he among the sons of Israel. From his shoulders and up, he was taller than any of the people. The people wanted a king, and the people got one that they could look up to and be proud of. It appears that Yahweh had wanted David to lead the people in time, but in his time, but they were impatient and wanted a king like the rest of the nations right then and there. You know, this is just a good example of us trying to do our will or force Yahweh's hand. It's not something that we can do. And you know, getting politically involved in the affairs of this world, it's just not really something that we need to do even. It's not something that I don't think any of us here want to do. We don't have the time for it. We are busy about our Father's business. So that's exactly what we should be about doing. So it's important that we do what's right in Yahweh's sight, not in our own, or not be greedy and desire what the other nations have or are doing. But young David is on the scene early on. In 1 Samuel 16:18 says, "And one of the young men said, 'Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, and Yahweh is with him.'" Young David, a shepherd boy, essentially, was considered a warrior because he had been known to have protected the flock against the lion, against the bear. He took them both down. Why? Well, because Yahweh was with him. He was able to do these things. In chapter 17, 34, 36, you can read there. We won't need to turn to it now, but it does say that he killed both. But eventually, David is going to be seen as a threat to Saul. Saul, in fact, will become very jealous of him as he captures the hearts of the people, which means Saul loses the hearts of the people. Saul, however, didn't start out this way, at least not for the most. Because some, you know, didn't necessarily think he would be a good king, but most, I think, did. He was certainly a man of character. 1 Samuel 9, 3 through 4, he followed his father's instructions. "Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost, so Kish said to his son Saul, 'Take now with you one of the servants and arise, go search for the donkeys.' He passed through the hill country of Ephraim and passed through the land of Shalishah, but they did not find them. Then they passed through the land of Shalem, but they were not there. Then he passed through the land." Do you get the sense that he took some time out to really do a thorough search? "But still they did not find them." And I guess we should ask the question, are we willing to do what our parents say? Are we willing to do what our Heavenly Father tells us to do? I mean, we can understand sometimes why it says to do certain things. Other times, we don't necessarily understand, but we should be doing those things nevertheless, whether we understand why or not. 1 Samuel 9 and verse 21, after giving a hint that he would be made king, he's still humble about it. "Saul replied, 'Am I not a Benjamite, of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family and least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to me in this way?'" I think as we consider Saul's life, we should consider our own calling. After all, are we not given a hint that will be given rulership with Yahshua in the coming kingdom. But what if we do what Saul ends up doing? Will we be accepted? If we stay humble and overcome till the end by being obedient, what does Yahweh's word say? Doesn't it promise a reward? But as we go through this, we'll see that Saul didn't keep Yahweh's word, and he suffered greatly because of it. And I think it's important that we do stay humble. Saul started out humble. I think we've started out humble. And some things happen, I think, to help us stay humble. I think it's important, so important, that Yahweh is, going to do what it takes to make sure that we do stay humble. But if we rebel, if we become arrogant and resist Yahweh's will for us, then we can end up like Saul. As we'll see in the end, he doesn't end up well. Luke 1:52, speaking of being humble, he has brought down rulers from their thrones, and he has exalted those that were humble. James 4 and verse 10 states, humble yourselves in the presence of Yahweh, and he will exalt you. So it's a teaching. It's a scriptural teaching. It's something I think we can realize the benefits of, even though it doesn't say, what being humble really does necessarily. But I think it does help us to rely more on Yahweh than ourselves. Because of ourselves, we can do nothing. But with Yahweh's help, we can do all things. And I think that's made even clearer in the scripture reading today. It was even pointed out, Yahweh did this for a man's request. But this man was very obedient to Yahweh. And in Joshua 10:40, was it? I think it talks about Joshua doing Yahweh's will completely. He went in and destroyed every living, breathing thing in the societies that he went into to overcome and to overthrow. And there's a reason for that. We'll get into a little bit of that. But he did what Saul didn't do. And he was certainly blessed because of it. He was blessed because he did according to Yahweh's word. Saul was anointed king by Samuel, but there were those who didn't listen or who didn't think Saul would be a good king. Saul actually showed good character about the matter by keeping silent. 1 Samuel 10 and verses 24 through 27. Samuel said to all the people, do you see him whom Yahweh has chosen? Surely there is no one like him among the people. So all the people shouted and said, long live the king. Then Samuel told the people the ordinances of the kingdom and wrote them in the book and placed it before Yahweh. And Samuel sent all the people away, each one to his own house. Saul also went to his house in Gibeah, and the valiant men whose hearts Elohim had touched went with him. But certain worthless men, notice it says worthless men said, how can this one deliver us? And they despised him and did not bring him any present. But he kept silent about the matter. And I think that does show good character on his part at this time. I think when we're mocked and accused of being religious nuts, which sometimes we are, they don't understand. They won't, but they will in the future. They won't now, but they will in the future. It's sometimes best to keep quiet and not even respond, not even respond to such situations that sometimes arise. But Saul sets a good example and shows a better way of being merciful and thankful rather than vengeful, as we read in verses 12 through 15 of 1 Samuel 11. Then the people said to Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death. But Saul said, not a man shall put to death this day, for today Yahweh has accomplished deliverance in Israel. Then Samuel said to the people, come and let us go up to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there. So all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before Yahweh in Gilgal. There they also offered sacrifices of peace offerings before Yahweh, and there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. So things were good. Things were pleasant. Things were going well. The king was making good decisions, and the people were you know, submitting to the king. But that started to change. And you read of the account. Now this the account in 1 Samuel takes a while. I mean, we're talking something like 30 years of transpiring time. So it doesn't happen overnight necessarily, but change does happen, or can happen. But in 1 Samuel 13, 3 through 4, it doesn't take too long before King Saul starts to change and his good character starts to turn bad. Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it, and then Saul blew the trumpet throughout the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." What's he doing? It says, "All Israel heard the news that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines, and also that Israel had become odious to the Philistines. The people were then summoned to Saul at Gilgal." Saul takes credit by blowing the trumpet, literally, blowing his trumpet. Then Saul takes his pride to a new level. As we go through this, we most likely remember the scripture that says pride goes before a fall. That's indeed the case with Saul. 1 Samuel 13, 8 through 9, Saul was given specific instructions to wait for Samuel at an appointed time. It says, "Now he waited 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, 'Bring me the burnt offering and the peace offerings.' And he offered the burnt offering." You can almost see it. It's like, where is everybody? Here, let me do this. And he did it. And in doing so, he sinned. And you see pride going before his fall here. He took it upon himself, something that was not for him to be doing. But Samuel comes right afterwards. But it should be pointed out that while Saul was a king, he was not allowed to offer up sacrifices for the people. Samuel, however, was given multiple roles, one of which was like as a priest. He was also a judge and a prophet. But the only priest that we see as a king is Joshua. He is a high priest, and he's also a king for us. After this sin, Saul continues to make bad decisions. He opposes the soldiers in a battle with a vow to not eat until victory over the Philistines. Samuel 14, 24. "Now the men of Israel were hard pressed on that day, for Saul had put the people under oath, saying, 'Cursed be the man who eats food before evening, and until I have avenged myself on my enemies.' So none of the people tasted food." But Jonathan didn't hear this, and he was in the battle. And he saw some honey, and he ate it. 1 Samuel 14, 29. "Then Jonathan said, 'My father has troubled the land. See now, my eyes have been brightened because I tasted a little bit of this honey.'" Jonathan knew it was a good thing to have eaten a little for strength and alertness to bring back, you know, himself. He was evidently exhausted. But Saul plans to kill him. But the people stand up against it, because they could see clearly that Saul was going in the wrong way. 1 Samuel 14, 43 through 45, "Then Saul said to Jonathan, 'Tell me what you have done.' So Jonathan said to him and said, 'I indeed tasted a little honey with the end of the staff that was in my hand. Here I am, I must die.' Saul said, 'May Elohim do this to me and more also, for you shall surely die, Jonathan.' But the people said to Saul, 'Must Jonathan die, he who has brought about this great deliverance in Israel? Far be it, as Yahweh lives, not one hair of his head shall fall on the ground, for he has worked with Elohim this day.' So the people rescued Jonathan, and he did not die." At this point, the people had more sense than their leader. Saul continues to sin in another battle with the Amalekites, 1 Samuel 15, 3. And instruction to Saul was to utterly destroy the Amalekites. It says, "Now go and strike Amalek and utterly destroy all that he has, and do not spare him, but put to death both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." Just like Joshua was told to do with some of the camps that he went into, some of the pagan societies. And scholars have pointed out that some of these pagan societies were absolutely corrupt and defiled, to the point that archaeology has shown evidence that even the animals had human venereal diseases. Every living thing needed to be wiped out. They completely polluted themselves and every other living thing. 1 Samuel 15:13-15. Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, "Blessed are you of Yahweh. I have carried out the command of Yahweh." Did he? Verse 14, "But Samuel said, 'What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?' Saul said, 'They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and oxen,'" the ones that weren't all, you know, diseased up and stuff, "'to sacrifice to Yahweh your Elohim, but the rest we have utterly destroyed.'" He brags about being obedient. And interestingly enough, he says to Samuel, "your Elohim." Just subtle changes over this man's character over time. 1 Samuel 15:20-21. "Then Saul said to Samuel, 'I did obey the voice of Yahweh and went on the mission on which Yahweh sent me, and have brought back Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took some of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the choicest of things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to Yahweh, your Elohim, at Gilgal.'" No matter how much one emphasizes a lie as being true, it doesn't make it true. Also, we do, I guess I should say it this way. Also, do we need to understand every reason why Yahweh would have us obey him the way he tells us to do? And, you know, this sort of thing is happening today. People are saying, "But, you know, we do it for the children. We take these pagan customs, which our forefathers have handed down to us, and we do it for the children. Because it's fun. It's you know, we make a show of it. And, you know, we invite all of our friends. And, you know, these things are good. They're really good. And we obey Yahweh with these things." But yet Yahweh says, "Don't worship me the way these pagans worship their deities." He doesn't like it. Do we really need to understand fully, or do we just need to do and accept what he says to do and do it? I'd say the latter would be the better for us in the long run. Punishment severe for Saul, and our punishment was severe for Saul, and it will be severe for us if we disregard Yahweh's word. 1 Samuel 15:24. "Then Saul said to Samuel, 'I have sinned. I have indeed transgressed the command of Yahweh in your words, because I feared the people and listened to their voice. Now, therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me, that I may worship Yahweh.' But Samuel said to Saul, 'I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of Yahweh, and Yahweh has rejected you from being king over Israel.' As Samuel turned to Saul, Saul seized the edge of his robe, and it tore. So Samuel said to him, 'Yahweh has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to your neighbor, who is better than you. Also, the glory of Israel will not lie or change his mind, for he is not a man that he should change his mind.'" A little bit of emphasis and a dig to Saul, I think, because Saul was changing. Saul had changed his mind. His character was changing. The kingdom was torn away from Saul, and without question, the kingdom can be torn from us if we go back and start sinning when we've been called out. And that's important to understand, because this is, I think, even maybe a bit more important than calling king or Saul to be king over Israel. We're talking about an eternal kingdom that is going to be granted to those that overcome. We're talking about overcoming to the end, not just overcoming for a little while and then changing our character and changing our ways to fit what we want to do. We're talking about following Yahweh's word. We're talking about doing what is pleasing to Him and basically living the lifestyle that is appropriate for those who have been called out and chosen. And here we are coming before Yahweh this day, which He has set apart. And others are saying, but Yahweh knows my heart. And they're watching the baseball game or football or, you know, mowing their lawn or doing whatever it is that they're doing to defile this day and themselves by being disobedient to Yahweh, what His word directly tells us to do. And it tells us to keep holy the seventh day. Human nature is interesting, especially when it submits to fleshly desires rather than what Yahweh desires from us. Saul admits the sin, but still wants to be honored in front of others. 1 Samuel 15:30-31. Then he said, I have sinned. That's pretty obvious. But please honor me now before the elders of my people and before all of Israel. Do this. Honor me. And go back with me, that I may worship Yahweh, your Elohim. Again, your Elohim. So Samuel went back following Saul. What does Saul do? Saul worships Yahweh. Interesting. Now, wait a minute. He wants to be exalted in front of the people. He wants to be honored in front of the elders, in front of all Israel, and he's worshiping. Saul's right behind him. Is he worshiping for Saul's benefit? Makes you wonder. It's odd that he says he worshiped Yahweh. When the Apostle Paul spoke to the assemblies, didn't he say that some actually slept? That some were sleeping? That they were actually dead spiritually, I think is what he's saying. They were still worshiping, but they were spiritually dead. Same thing with Saul at this point in his life. We either follow Yahweh's way or an alternative way, the way of this world, perhaps, which is under the influence of Satan the devil. Yahweh's spirit was removed from Saul, and an evil spirit came and replaced it. In fact, Saul starts losing his mind. People praise David over Saul, but Saul was outraged and tries to kill David, we find here, continuing on in 1 Samuel 18. 1 Samuel 18:7-12. The women sang as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his ten thousands. Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed to David ten thousands, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. Now it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from Elohim came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house. While David was playing the harp with his hand as usual, and a spear was in Saul's hand, Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped from his presence twice. Now Saul was afraid of David, for Yahweh was with him, but had departed from Saul. It appears that Saul was concerned David would have the kingdom, since he said, what more can he have but the kingdom? But he was told that it would no longer be his anyway. So this is a pitiful state that Saul is in now, because he's grappling for to stay in power. And you see these kings being removed from the Middle East, which appears to be the rising of the, well, you read in Daniel chapter 11, the king of the south. I suspect a king of the south, the South being Islamic, the Islamic uprising, will be, showing himself eventually. But it's in process, and it looks like we're seeing prophecy being fulfilled in front of our eyes. But Saul was not in his right mind any longer. Satan also lost his mind by doing what he did. Now Satan is out to murder and tell lies, and we see the same thing happening to Saul. 1 Samuel 18:22. Saul thought, I will give her to him, speaking of his daughter, because she loved David, that she may become a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore Saul said to David, for a second time you may be my son-in-law today. Then Saul commanded his servants, speak to David secretly, saying, behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore, become the king's son-in-law. A little subtle, you know, maneuvering behind the scenes. But Saul was deceptive, lying, and basically, you know, attempting to murder David. But Saul's daughter loved David, so Saul thought it would be a good opportunity to have the Philistines kill him. He thought he'll send David into the Philistine territory, asking for 200 of their foreskins as a dowry. Turns out David returned successfully. He did do it because Yahweh was with him. But as we've already seen, Yahweh departed from Saul, and Saul has ended up dead, spiritually dead. But, you know, as we go further here, he ends up physically dead as well. And a coward, actually, at the end. 1 Samuel 31:1-6. Now the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain in Mount Gilboa. The Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. The battle went heavily against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and pierce me through with it, otherwise these uncircumcised will come and pierce me through and make sport of me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. So Saul took his sword and fell on it. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. Thus Saul died with his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men on that day together. Now in verse 3, the New American Standard says he was badly wounded. Concerning this, we have the Greek Septuagint, the LXX, and also the Hebrew Masoretic text, the MT, saying two different things. In the Smith and Helways Bible commentary by Smith and Helways Publishing, it says the LXX, the Septuagint, asserts that Saul was wounded in the belly. But the MT states that he writhed in fear of the archers, the Masoretic text. This is the Hebrew clarifying what they messed up in the Greek. And I think it's important to understand that Saul not only had lost his mind, he was full of fear rather than being courageous for Yahweh, because Yahweh was no longer with him. So we have this being worked out, and we see it. And it does take time. It's 30-plus years, but we see a snapshot in the chapters here in 1 Samuel. Now, King Saul at the end kills himself like Judas Iscariot did, interestingly enough. But the lesson here for us is we must build good character by obeying Yahweh and not go backsliding as King Saul. He lost everything, including his life, in the end. 1 Chronicles 10:13-14, we'll close up with this. So Saul died for his trespass, which he committed against Yahweh, because the word of Yahweh, which he did not keep. And also because he asked counsel of a medium, making inquiry of it, and did not inquire of Yahweh. Therefore he killed him and turned the kingdom to David, the son of Jesse. Saul started out good, no question about it, but he ended up unrepentant and a coward. The people demanded change. They wanted a king like the other nations. Sound familiar? change. They essentially rejected Yahweh as their king, and it didn't work out well for them. We need to think about things like this, otherwise we could ask for something we might regret. Be careful what you ask for. Remember King Saul.